We are unable to bring you today's regularly scheduled Charlotte Talks. Instead, we'll listen back to our conversation about the tiny house trend. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. I don't know about you, but I grew up in what would be considered today a small home, at least by today's standards. I grew up in the kind of house that today is being torn down and replaced by something two or three times as large. That's a trend that's happening with increasing frequency in neighborhoods closer into the centers of town as people tired of long, congested commutes want to move their families nearer to the leisure activities downtowns provide. But they also want room. Yet, there's another trend going on, downsizing. For any number of reasons, there are people who want to simplify their lives, perhaps reduce expenses. And one way to do that is by moving into a smaller house. Most of those people are trading their 4 or 5,000 square foot homes for a 12 to 1,500 square foot home or condo. But there's a subset of individuals who really want to change their lives. They want tiny houses. Structures that are about 300 to 500 square feet and less. You heard me right. No larger than 500 square feet. And we're going to talk with some of the folks following this trend, supplying the demand for tiny houses and actually living in or planning to live in one. Ryan Mitchell lives in Charlotte and is the managing editor of thetinylife.com. He has also built his own tiny house. Where does it sit?
So I have a property here in Charlotte that I live in my tiny house on. It's 27 acres, right? But it's still within the city limits. And only been in it for a couple of months now, but it's been kind of a long-term goal of mine for the past couple of years.
You could have put a 10,000 square foot house on that property.
We could put a lot of 10,000 square foot houses on that property.
Well, Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
John Williams is a consultant with Green Building Concepts and founder of Camp Tiny House of the Triad. He, too, is building his own tiny house on a bus. It's a bus conversion, right?
Yes, I have a bus conversion plus a cargo container. I'm having two high cube cargo containers brought in. The upper one will be a tiny house. The lower one will be aquaponics. But I'm doing several examples of tiny homes mm-hmm. on the property.
And aren't you planning to take one of those containers and turn it up on its end so you have a high-rise tiny house?
That's right. I will have a four-story tiny house with the doors blooming open at the top for a rooftop deck.
And where do you put the staircase? Outside?
Inside. So it just goes around like a staircase going up a high rise.
Okay. Zach Jones is co-founder of Project Wosho. That's a modular home design company focusing on small footprint houses, sustainable design, reduced building materials, more efficient use of space, all tailored specifically to the wants and needs of homeowners. And he joins us by phone from where his business is located in Danville, Virginia. He also has a factory, I'm told, here in Charlotte. Thank you for joining us, Zach.
Thank you for having me.
And last but certainly not least, Amy Gurley and Grace Downer are two people at the beginning of their journey toward tiny house living. They are moving to Arizona and building their tiny house there. He's got 27 acres. You could stay here and build your tiny house on his property. Welcome to the program.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Is this really a movement? Because I've read that it's a movement. And if it is a movement, how long has it been one? And are you worried that if it's a movement, that it's also a fad? I'm not sure who to ask that question. Ryan, go
ahead. So I think it probably got initially popular around 2007 or around then by a gentleman named Jay Schaefer.
Because of the recession?
I think there was – the recession certainly helped, but it was – I think there was other things that people were looking for in society and in their own lives that tiny houses kind of answered for them. And, you know, that was the big question for me as a blogger and other people that do this is, you know, was the recession fueling the interest in this and was it going to go away? Mm-hmm. And I think we can, you know, fairly easily say the recession is behind us at this point, or at least most of it. And we've only seen our numbers in terms of traffic, in terms of houses built, in terms of interest and events and coverage just you know, growing exponentially.
Well, speaking of events, you organized, I believe, the first ever Tiny House Conference, which was in Charlotte last year, and this year it will be in Portland, Oregon. Charlotte and Portland seem to have this symbiotic relationship, a 3,000-mile-away relationship, because they keep pointing to Portland as a place we ought to go to see how they do it, because we could do it and maybe be as good as they are. So what's the deal with Portland, and how many people have signed up for your Tiny House Conference out there?
Sure, yeah. So we're expecting between 400 and 500 folks coming to the conference there in Portland. It's a progressive city. It's open to new ideas. I think Charlotte is a little bit probably more conservative in terms of their building codes and kind of alternative structures. So we find, Portland just seems to be a kind of a hotbed of activity. North Carolina is actually kind of following, probably second in terms of activity. And then
activity in the tiny house world?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So, we decided on Portland for our second location, and then we plan to come back to North Carolina in 2016.
Now, for those of you who may not be familiar with what we're talking about, we have some examples of these homes on our website. You go to wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. We have a link there to a Pinterest page full of tiny houses, or I suppose you can go to ryanstheTinyLife.com. You can look up if you Google Project WOSHO, you can see the houses they're building. You can see what you're doing, John, at Camp Tiny House of the Triad. And you're building, as you said at the very beginning, a bus conversion. Version tiny house. Isn't that how this began, with tiny homes on wheels?
I think that everybody has started and have already done all the living in the RV trailers, if need be, for whatever reason.
So would you call that a tiny house? Would you call an RV or an Airstream?
Well,
or?
This is motorized, so this would be a full-fledged motor home, mm-hmm. That made out of a 40-foot-long bus. So I'm larger than most tiny
houses.
How
many square feet is a 40-foot-long bus? Do you know?
40 foot by 8.
Do the math. Okay, fine.
Right.
Amy, you say that in many cases, tiny houses were first put on wheels to skirt city codes, if I'm not mistaken, that required a dwelling to be 500 square feet or larger. But aren't there also codes governing homes on wheels? Don't they relegate those to trailer parks, whether they look like a trailer or not?
My understanding is the wheels is what keeps the permitting office and that from breaking those rules. Mm-hmm. So the wheels are what gets you around all those standards that Mecklenburg County or any other county hold against you when building.
Do they hold against you the fact that you're putting a 500-square-foot? How big is your house?
150 square feet.
150-square-foot home.
Yes.
On 27 acres. Do they worry about that? Does your next door neighbor worry about that?
Right. So technically, in the eyes of the city, my home is an illegal home. I've tried to work with the city with building codes and kind of meeting those things, but that minimum square footage is always the sticking point.
Now, I said at the beginning 300 to 500 square feet, but as I get deep, because I wrote that on Friday, and I'm lazy, and on Sunday I didn't feel like rewriting it, but after reading about all of this, I discovered that a lot of these houses that we're talking about are 150 to 186 square feet. I can't even fathom that. How big is that?
The size of our bedroom currently.
So do you have a queen size or a king size bed in the bedroom?
We could put a king, but we have a queen in. Right?
So can you walk around the queen? I'm just trying to get an idea how much space that
is. We can. It's a sizable bedroom.
Okay. But that would be the whole house. That would be the bedroom, the kitchen, the living room, the bathroom, storage, mm-hmm. the laundry room. How?
We have a loft as well, so can go vertical, and you can sleep, up.
Everything has to have more than one use. Preferably, in our case, we're even looking for things to have 3 and 4 uses. Right. By the time we're done, we could technically sleep 10 people in our 150 square feet, because we'll have 2 lofts, we'll have a convertible sofa, and we're doing kind of a hammock and net setup for the middle.
Okay. Now, Zach, we did a program with UNC Charlotte a couple of years ago. They were involved in a competition to design and build a really sustainable, energy-efficient home. And many of the features that they put in that home in terms of furniture and how they stored things and where things sat, so that the kitchen was next to the bathroom, so that the pipes were very close together, etc. Remind me of what you're doing up in Danville with Wosho. The houses, the design of those homes look like that. You really take advantage of every square inch of space.
Sure. It was a big goal for us to come up with a way to use a small space in the smartest way possible. And there's a lot of things out there that come out during, like, a lot of these competitions that you speak of, where kids are coming up with ideas to, you know, utilize the space as much as possible and not take away from the comfort, or not make the person who's living in the home feel like they're sacrificing anything. And we kind of researched through those and saw there were some really great ideas, and a lot of homes were implementing them. So that was one of our big focuses, for sure.
It's very modern. It seems very sleek. It has to be by design. You can't put, Victorian furniture in a 186-square-foot home, because it's gonna, the sofa, the divan, will take up everything, take up the whole space. So you really have designed not only the house, but the furniture. Is that the typical way most people are doing these projects?
I would say so. I would say in some cases you'd see people finding things online that are you can purchase, but most of it's some of the best stuff, I should say, is the creative ideas that these folks are having as they build their own. We've seen some really great fold-out tables. We've seen really great multi-use seating arrangements that end up having enough space when you fold it out to be a bed, but it also has room for almost all of one person's clothing. You know, these are things that are kind of new. Like, we've never had to really think about, well, how much space is under the couch and how can we use it? And, you know, since this movement's been really picking up, there's some great stuff coming out because people are figuring out how to do it because of necessity, right? Hmm.
We're going to talk later about how you get ready for this, because if you're coming out of an apartment or a regular-sized home, you can't take all your stuff. You just can't. But as you plan this, Amy and Grace and Ryan and John, as you have moved into your house, Ryan, and you're planning your bus, et cetera, what are you finding in terms of how to furnish it, Grace?
We're finding that, again, everything has to take more than one role, but also that you do end up having to possibly build your own furniture. You do end up looking for ideas everywhere to purchase if there's something better. And also for us, we just, design-wise, we still wanted it to be simple, yes, but comfortable. So also just looking at what's really important to you. It gets down to the best of the best. There's no good with a tiny
house. So it's more than those – I forgot there's a name for those beds that pull out of the wall.
Murphy bed.
Murphy bed.
It's more than a Murphy bed. It's a Murphy everything, isn't it? I mean, kind of.
That's right.
Are you good at this, at either building your own furniture? Have you been able to find stuff that is going to work for your house?
I will be good. But no, I'm not currently good. Lots of research, lots of hit or miss, writing down ideas and then tossing them aside. Uh-huh. A whiteboard has become my best friend. Okay. You erase it and try again.
As you get ready for your bus conversion, are there special things that you need for that, for furniture?
It is already converted.
It's already done. Okay.
It's already.
So what have you done?
And so I keep it a complete open floor plan, so it's the 320 square foot, and it'll have a full deck on top of things. But with that, on the inside, I've put a full couch in there that is a height of bed as well as a couch, and then a love seat, and then I have several cabinets. I bartered for this, so I've got a whole 3,000 maybe into this bus.
So a bus is narrow and long. Which way does the bed orient, the couch orient? Does it go along the long wall?
Along the long wall.
Okay. We have to take a break. I want to come out and talk about to Ryan about what he did for his 150-square-foot house, and then I want to find out why you've all decided to do this. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Nantahala Outdoor Center, inviting families to beat the summer heat on a whitewater rafting trip, offering 4 rafting trips in North Carolina. More information at noc.com. Monday on Charlotte Talks, start the week with Governor Pat McCrory's take on a variety of topics, among them the state's budget, which has yet to be approved, his proposed infrastructure bonds, ongoing disagreements between the governor and GOP legislators, the controversial plan by the legislature to control redistricting in Greensboro's local election, removal of the Confederate flag from our license plates, and much more. And we'll give you the chance to speak with Governor Pat McCrory when Charlotte Talks, Monday at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Reem Show, the Friday News Roundup. Technical glitches temporarily shut down the New York Stock Exchange and United Airlines. The GOP tells Donald Trump to tone down his rhetoric on Mexican immigrants. And South Carolina lawmakers vote to take down the Confederate flag.
Join the News Roundup on the Diane Reem Show from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about tiny houses, whether they're on wheels or not. And we're talking about houses that are 150 square feet to about 500 square feet. Ryan Mitchell is living in 150 square feet, managing editor of thetinylife.com. John Williams is founder of Camp Tiny House of the Triad. We'll talk more about what they do. Amy Gurley and Grace Downer are Charlottians. Trading in, I don't know what you live in now, but your bedroom is as big as what you're going to live in when you move to Arizona and build your tiny house. And Zach Jones is co-founder of Project Wosho. They build these houses, and you can see some examples at their website or on our website. And we also want to pose a question to Twitter and Facebook listeners. Could you downsize your life enough to fit into less than 500 square feet? Let us know your thoughts about that as we go through the program. John, you're having, as you said, this meetup. And that's one of the things that Camp Tiny House of the Triad does. You're kind of a demo. You're kind of a resource for people to come see what it's like, to give them advice on what it's like. You have these occasional meetups. I'm not sure what they are, but you can tell us what they are because you're about to have one at IKEA.
Yes. our next little meetup for – we just had a tiny workshop day this Saturday, a couple days ago, and then Friday evening. But, yes, the on the meetup.com is the Camp Tiny House of the Triad NC, and then, of course, Facebook of Camp Tiny House of the NC. And then Pinterest of that as well, which is Dr. John 2711, I think it is. But all of that, there is all the synergy of what's going on. I am creating and have for the last 2 years, I rent out rooms of my main house. And so it is a tiny co-housing community, a pocket neighborhood, if you will.
Why do you do this? This seems odd to me. Why do you do this?
Well, I enjoy making spaces and places, and if you have a passion and you love it, you should share it and then live it.
And you were mentioning off the air that if you're planning to do this, IKEA is a great resource because they have furniture that does what you need it to do in these small spaces.
Many people use IKEA, very transformable type furniture, so our next meetup group will be coming down to IKEA and spend the whole day shopping and looking and getting ideas, whether you go back and make your own or purchase things that will be great for a small space.
You have to spend the whole day at IKEA because you can't find the exit once you get in.
This is good.
let's go back and talk about your tinylife.com is also a resource for people interested in this. It's a blog.
Correct? Yes.
What do you talk about on that? Because it's not just the tiny house. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. When I first started the blog back in 2009, it was kind of a catalog of my design ideas I wanted to put in my home. And then as I started building, it was, this is kind of how I'm doing things. How do you, put the stud here and wire it and things like that. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm living in it, it's kind of transitioned to more about the lifestyle. So, how a tiny house is a vehicle to my passions and my goals in my life to kind of refocus on what's important for me.
Okay. Let's talk about why. people do this? I'm sure all of you, all five of you, have your own reasons for being interested in this and wanting to do this and doing it in some cases. Ryan, yours, I understand, began with a layoff. You and your coworkers were standing on a street with boxes of personal belongings thinking, oh, God, now what?
Right, yeah. So back in 2008, I was fresh out of grad school mm-hmm. and had my first, you know, kind of big adult job. And after about 6 months, the owner walked in and laid everyone off in the company one Friday afternoon. And, you know, that was right at the beginning of the recession. And I remember the feeling of, you know, how am I going to pay my rent? What am I going to do financially? How am I going to pay all my bills? And I knew I never wanted to be in that spot again. And so I started looking at my budget and I noticed about half of my, you know, income was going towards housing. And I said, crazy question, what if I could just eliminate that whole thing?
I think it's you who brought this up. I've read so much over the weekend, I don't know, but maybe it was you who brought this up, that a lot of us are raised to get jobs so that we can buy a house and support ourselves in that house and the food and all the things that go into living in a house. And a lot of our income, over half of our income goes to support that structure in which we spend very little time because we're at work.
Right.
And it doesn't make a lot of sense. Why are you doing this, Amy and Grace? Why are you deciding to change your lives completely?
I think being at work is probably the key. I mean, I worked 70-hour weeks prior to this, and it was all to pay bills. And very little time to spend with Grace or my loved ones. Mm-hmm. It was all to keep a roof over our heads and lights on. And I began to live my life for work and not live my life. And I didn't want that to be the ruler of my life anymore.
Why do you hate America?
I'm just trying to change it just a little bit.
When you tell your friends, when you've told your family that here's what we're going to do, we're going to sell everything we own, we're going to move to Arizona, we're going to build a tiny house, and that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. What's their reaction? What has been their reaction?
A lot of them are like, I wish I had the, you know, cojones to do that. Because I think for me, employment was part of it, but it was also, we'll call it a midlife opportunity instead of crisis, where you're also thinking about...
20? You're like 20.
I'm 36. And Amy's, you know, 42, and we're in this space where you start thinking about retirement and what does that mean for us now? And after bouts and bouts with unemployment, we just felt like the world is changing, mm-hmm. and we're in this middle generation where one foot is our parents who worked the same job for 40 years and retired. So we're like, are we supposed to do that? And then the other foot that's going, well, no, we have to make a new world. And, I mean, you mentioned America. It is a new American dream. Mm-hmm. The world is changing. It's not just all going to snap right back. I mean, the recession, I think, changed us and made us start thinking about bartering and a new way to live and a new way to do life. And what does that mean? So for us, we wanted to have, honestly, something that no one could take from us, not an HOA, not a late rent payment, not getting laid off. We very much wanted to have a home that would be ours.
John, you're older than they are.
Yes.
When did you start doing this and why?
Well, I started doing this back when I was 16. Went and lived underground in a freshwater reservoir. And so from clubhouses...
You're not well, John.
I know. from tree houses as a young person to clubhouses to leaving the home and living in that and going to school. And then ironically in 79 and 80 during another downturn in things, I was a designer builder of earth covered homes. So 2 foot of earth on top and solar passive and all that wonderful good stuff.
That's really energy efficient too, isn't it?
Very. Well, they have never used since 79 and 80 in Des Moines, Iowa, they have never used any heating or air conditioning.
Wow.
And so they're built everywhere.
So why aren't we all living like that then?
We should be.
Okay. All right. That was a serious question.
And so the tiny homes that I am going to be doing as well will be like shipping containers that will be earth-covered, solar passive as well. The two cargo containers stacked will be a tiny house on the upper one, the high cube, and 40 foot long, and the lower one will have aquaponics.
Now, there cannot be, I would think, any codes, any city, county, state building codes that would apply to what you want to do. So how difficult is it to get it passed?
The key is to work with what is already there in black and white and stay within the law. So therefore, I rent rooms at my home. I can rent up to 4 individuals, non-family members. So that is the co-housing. Mm-hmm. That is the catalyst to be able to do my pocket neighborhood, the examples of many tiny homes. And so, therefore, the people that are out there to touch, feel, see, and try out, like, you know, you try on a pair of shoes before you buy them. Mm-hmm. So I'm making this place where people can do that.
Well, this is a lifestyle change, and I would think that you have to kind of try it on for size before you fully commit. But then how do you do that? Zach, you deal with people who come to you and want to build these houses. You want them to build the house for them. We've just done a show on urban homesteading, and one of the things that we discovered was that even though people may want to live that way, they don't want to necessarily put it all together. They're not good at that, so they have somebody else put it together for them, and then they live that way. So when people come to you, Zach, have they ever done this before? Do they worry about buying a house from you and then suddenly realizing, I can't live like this?
That's one of the first conversations I try to have with everyone that calls us that's interested. You know, I give them an idea of how much storage space they're going to have. One great exercise is to say, you know, think of how much clothes you have and think of having maybe 2 or 3 bins as clothes storage. And would that be enough for you?
Yeah, because people have walk-in closets bigger than these houses you're building.
Sure. And, you know, in a lot of cases, you think about how much space you're using. That whole closet's filled with clothes that you may haven't worn in years, right? And once you start really looking at what you have, it's not incredibly hard to narrow down what you have into those bins. And a lot of people who have done it, who I've talked to, who live in tiny houses, say it's a wonderful feeling to get down to 300 items in your home. Once you get past having stuff, a lot of the space that we have, we end up buying stuff to fill the space. And then when we think about tiny houses, we're saying, what am I going to do with all my stuff? Well, the reason you bought the stuff in the first place is to fill that extra bedroom, right? So going through those sort of steps is what helps us with our customers.
And a lot of people don't realize it, but one of you wrote, maybe it was you, Ryan, that 80% of the stuff that we use after 6 months, we never touch it again.
Correct. Yeah, either gets relegated to some box in the attic or gets thrown out or some kind of variation of that. So most of what we buy, we aren't using long term. It's not very an intentional use of a resource.
And a lot of people have storage spaces that they rent for their excess stuff because they have no place to put it in their house. You could live in one of those storage units. I mean, that would be a thing. I was going to ask how much this cost to do. And then, Zach, I went on your website, Wosho website, W-O-S-H-O, and it turns out that your Henco model, I'm not sure where the name comes from, is 192 square feet. That's the biggest of the houses, I believe, that you build, and it costs $65,000 furnished. Now, I didn't do the math on 192 square, what the price per square foot is, but this is a complete house, plumbing, electrical systems, et cetera, for $65,000. Now, in 19... I bought my first house, and it was 1,200 square feet, and it wasn't much more than that. So why is it so expensive?
Yeah, that's a great question. We get it all the time. And if you look at the tiny house builders out there, that's kind of what the numbers look like for a turnkey option. Two things happen to make that number jump up. Just because you're lowering your square footage doesn't mean, you know, you cut your square footage in half, but you may not cut your refrigerator in half or your air conditioner, right? So you get appliances that are sort of concentrated to a small square footage, and because we do the house fully furnished, that shoots it up a little bit. But You know, when you lower your square footage, it also opens this window for a budget of really high-quality material. And I'm not going to say all the builders out there, but a lot of the builders out there, even you, Ryan, decided to use really high-quality material because you could afford it. And that also shoots the price up.
I think, Grace or Amy, I think one of you said that living in a small house could allow some people who would really like a high-end kitchen, perhaps with a quartz countertop. They can't put that in their 1,800-square-foot house because they can't afford the price of the quartz. But in a tiny house, they can. So they can have really high-end finishes and live in the lap of luxury in a small space.
I come from commercial construction about 15 years as a PM, and I know...
Production manager.
Project manager.
Project manager.
So I know that just some of the garbage, the leftovers that come from some of these condos would suit a tiny house perfectly.
Remnants.
Yeah, remnants, exactly. Uh-huh. And you get those remnants and pay a couple of dollars, if not free, and there you have it. You know, you just find a way.
I think it was you, John, who kind of gasped when I said that the 192 square feet cost $65,000. What does it cost you to do what you do?
So far in all of the things that I'm doing, I've got probably about $5,000 tied up into a number of things. The bus, I've got about $3,000 into and bartered for the rest. There is a lot of the sustainable simplicity, and part of the sustainable simplicity is the art of bartering and gathering resources and everything. So I have all these very, very large windows that are inch-thick commercial-grade windows that will go into the treehouse pods and everything.
You're doing a lot of experimentation. You are an incubator of tiny houses. You use shipping containers, micropods. I'm not sure what they
That's
are.
That's right.
What's a micropod?
A micropod is about 4 foot by 8 foot. Okay. You live in it.
Treehouses, bus conversions, cob and earth bag.
Mm-hmm.
What in heaven's name is that?
Well, it's a trendy thing too, it's always been historically done, you know, from your sod houses on up. But people are turning to many alternative building means to build their small spaces. And so simply put, they use the earth bags, which is bags, long bags full of earth, and tamp down and you stack them up and build a house. The cob, which is the clay and straw and compost to that makes up the little bricks and the adobe that you do. And so then, of course, you can get into the basics of the Indian teepees and other kinds of...
How big is a teepee, the average teepee?
Well, the real teepees are probably about 20 foot in diameter and then obviously go up to a point.
But you really have to live simply if you're going to live in a teepee, right?
Yes, and I intend to find out. I will have two of them on the property.
Wow. Let's talk about building codes and zoning rules. I would guess that building codes might be easier to follow when you're building a house, and particularly if you buy one from Wosho, because we'll talk about how they do what they do, and what they do is factory build these places, so they're really well built. But finding a place to put that house might be problematic because there are zoning codes, and if you own a 1,500-square-foot house in the neighborhood and suddenly you come upon a teardown or an empty lot and you want to put your 150-square-foot house on there, the neighbors might raise some eyebrows and put up some roadblocks, right? Wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think tiny houses are a new concept. You know, people with their homes, you know, like you guys were saying, you know, they're working a ton to kind of, you know, pay for these houses, so they're worried about their property value. So building codes are a big thing
it. We'll come back and talk more about that because people don't want a shanty town cropping up next door to them, and that may be how they view some of these, even if they're not. We're going to come right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and NC Warn, advancing North Carolina's growing solar power industry. Volunteer opportunities at ncwarn.org. And the Charlotte Hounds, Charlotte's Major League Lacrosse team, fun for the whole family. Tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 p.m. in Memorial Stadium Uptown. Tickets and game schedule at charlottehounds.com. It's Friday, and that means it's the Friday News Roundup on the Diane Rehm Show coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. Technical glitches temporarily shut down the New York Stock Exchange and United Airlines. The GOP reacts to Donald Trump's rhetoric on Mexican immigrants, and South Carolina's lawmakers vote to take down the Confederate flag. Those will be the topics discussed when a panel of journalists join Diane Rehm for analysis of the week's top national news stories. It's coming up at 10 o'clock here on 90.7 WFAE.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
There are a lot of economic repercussions, not just for Greece, but for the Eurozone, if Greece were to stand out.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
You're going to have every district in the state scrambling to hire more teachers at the very last minute. To say that's a challenge would be an understatement.
Cabarrus County schools would have to hire...
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about tiny houses and people who build them and people who want to live in them, some on wheels, some permanently affixed to the ground. Ryan Mitchell has built a 150-square-foot tiny house here in the Charlotte area. He's also the managing editor of thetinylife.com, which is a blog and website about all things tiny, how to pare down, the fact that this is a lifestyle change and choice that you have to prepare for. John Williams is the founder of Camp Tiny House of the Triad. They are kind of an incubator of this lifestyle and a place to go to learn about and see examples of what we're talking about. Zach Jones is co-founder of Project Wosho, which builds these houses, factory-built houses. And Amy Gurley and Grace Downer are moving to Arizona to their tiny house on wheels. Just before the break, we talked about zoning. And if you have 27 acres, as you do, Ryan, it might be one thing. But you have a whole bunch of different examples of tiny homes on your property, John. Do you have special zoning? Are you out in the country someplace where nobody cares?
I am right in town. I am an example of urban homesteading, being sustainable.
What do your neighbors think?
The neighbors all like it except one to the south. And so with that, you must stay within the law, the letter of the law, and work with what is there in black and white.
But I mean,
at this time.
But to live in a typical suburban house,
mm-hmm.
and next door somebody puts a shipping container, the kind that would be on a ship and then put on the back of a tractor trailer, and then they dump it in your yard, and suddenly people are living in that box. Doesn't that cause some consternation?
Yes. And the key is not with most, but with one. And the key is to not make it look like a shipping container.
Oh.
Just because it is a shipping container doesn't mean it has to look like a shipping container.
And your houses, Zach, do not look like shipping containers. They actually look very much like a couple of houses that are going up in town on Commonwealth Avenue and in the Cherry neighborhood. They're very modern, almost L.A.-style houses from the outside. And they're factory-built. I've heard from commercial builders that in many cases, factory-built homes are actually better built than stick-built homes, homes built on the site, because they're controlled by factory controls. They are not in the elements when they're not finished, so that when they're put together on site, they're pretty much like a brand-new car.
Exactly. With our building process, you know, we looked to see what was out there, what was the new way to do things, and we sort of doubled up. So we took the build it in a factory process because we can remove all that wasted material in this better structure. But also, stick building is a traditional building method that was designed in the 1800s. Hmm. You know, I'm 25 years old. I have an iPhone in my pocket. I want to do things the new way, right? So what's new out there? So we also include a system called Echo Panels, which is a SIPS technology where the walls themselves don't have actual studs in them. They're insulated panels that snap together like Legos. So it's quick to build, there's less waste material, and it's super efficient.
Do they hold up in, like, if you put a house down at the beach and there was a hurricane coming, would your house snap apart or would it stay together?
It would actually hold better than most of the stick-built ones in the area. That was a big thing that we wanted to make sure was tight with all these new ideas we were putting together, And from what we can tell from the numbers of the manufacturer that's done checks with the panels, we're looking at like 170 mile per hour winds before there's any damage to these.
Your main factory and your corporate headquarters is in Danville, Virginia, which is where you are today, but you also have a factory here in Charlotte. Why?
It's that two parts we talked about. So there's one manufacturing plant that makes the panels themselves, Echo Panels, and then we have another plant that puts it together in a modular system. So the whole home can be built as much as possible before it gets on site. So we spend less time and money on site with a construction company. Like you said, just like a car, when you build in a factory like that, it's just much more efficient.
Hmm. How are you deciding to go? You're getting a home on wheels, but it's not going to be like a trailer. It's going to be more like a house, correct?
I mean, it is. It sits on the trailer.
Right.
But
it looks like a house?
But it looks like a house.
So when you say it looks like a house, I actually have a picture of one. There's a house being pulled by a truck, and it is a tiny little cabin-like.
Exactly.
With an A-frame roof.
Right.
And a front porch, and it's being hauled by this, I guess, F-150.
Right.
That's what you're planning to do.
That's correct.
You buy those, or do you have to build
it
yourself?
You buy the trailer, and there actually is specific trailers made for this. They're a little beefier. They're more structurally sound so that they can haul the weight mm-hmm. of the actual tiny house. So
ours will be stick-built. We're going to build it.
And does that provide problems since you're going to move it? It's not going to be sitting on the ground someplace. You're going to keep it on this trailer, and you're going to travel with it through Arizona and other places. If you stick-build a house on a trailer, does that provide mobility challenges?
No, not if you do it well. You have to do everything with quality and with intention. You have to understand aerodynamic, being able to maneuver in traffic, things like that. I mean, you have to build it with intention.
And it's your goal to be off the grid when you do this. Does that mean solar energy? Because it gets very cold in Arizona at night and very hot in the day. So you need air conditioning and heat, it seems to me.
Solar energy is definitely one way we're going to go. Composting toilets. Is another way, which is a whole new issue.
Yes, a lot of people ask you about the bathroom aspects of living small. I'm not sure why that's so intriguing to people, but a composting toilet.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it's intriguing as much as it's just the reality.
Uh-huh.
And when I first started looking at this, that was my biggest concern. Being realistic about it.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's definitely something that I've done a lot of research about, and there's a part of our blog that is dedicated to that.
Okay. And, John, you say your goal is to be off the grid, no mortgage, poor, and happy.
And I am all of those presently.
You're poor and happy?
Absolutely. I don't do any of this with money. Who needs money?
All right. Ryan, you live in a tiny house. Mm-hmm. Tell me the difference between what you did and what Zach does with modular-built houses.
Sure. So, Zach is using SIP panels, structurally insulated panels, mm-hmm. and obviously a factory setting where I did mine with standard stick-built, and I built it myself kind of on-site. And I think probably about 90% of tiny home folks want to build their own tiny house. And stick-built is a pretty approachable method. I mean, it's a old method, traditional method. But people can, cut wood pretty easy other than, instead of like creating the SIP panels. You really have to do that in a factory setting metal fabrication or something like that.
And are you off the grid? Or are you on the grid?
I'm off the grid. I have a big solar array panel system, and then a composting toilet, and then
what did it cost you to build the house?
The house total was about $25,000.
And so, what does that mean for you and your life today? Because the house is built,
mm-hmm.
you're living in the house, you're off the grid.
Yep.
What does that mean to you today in terms of your monthly expenses? What do you have to do to support yourself?
Everything, from my house to utilities to, my car payment or car insurance and all that kind of stuff is about $500 a month. And that's just to live. Obviously, I make more than that, so I have a very comfy life. I can save a lot of money.
Will you upsize at some point?
You know, maybe.
But if it's just adding another 150 square feet?
Right. I think if I were to get married or something like that, I'd probably look at a larger option, but well, that's relative.
That brings me to this. Where do you go if you get mad at your partner?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no place to go. You can't go in the other room. There is no other room.
Outside.
What? Yes.
What happens?
Opposite lofts.
Opposite lofts? What does that
lofts.
Mean? Oh, lofts.
Lofts, yeah.
And you have pets.
Yeah. We do.
So 150 square feet mobile home, two people, and how many pets?
Two
pets. That's a lot of stuff. In
we're already all in the same space. If you, I mean, you know your average dog, they're going to follow you everywhere you go.
That's true. That's true.
And it's already there, you know. We're already living.
So how practical is this? You have all kinds of people living on your property in all kinds of spaces. How practical is this?
Technically, they rent rooms from me, mm-hmm. and then we recreate, so to speak, in the back property. So I have one married couple that is building a large, tiny home there. I have one.
How large is a large, tiny home?
36 foot by 8.5 feet.
Okay.
And another couple is bringing in an RV trailer, 32 foot RV trailer, and their challenge is to upfit it, if you will, to where it is not needed to be hooked to water, electricity, and everything, so it'll be off-grid.
Zach, when people come to you, and you, I know you talk them through this, and you ask a lot of questions before you, before anybody commits, where are people having you take the homes that you're building for them? What kinds of areas are they being located in?
That's a great question. We expected in the beginning to have a lot of North Carolina's interest. But mostly what we're seeing is West Coast, and we're seeing a lot of going to Arizona, which is odd enough. But people are either, in most cases or some cases, someone they know has a large plot of land, and there's a house already on it, and they're looking to build an accessory dwelling on that land. And in other cases, there's people who are looking to buy land to put the home there specifically. But it's just everywhere. We've had people from California, Canada, Spain, Germany contact us. So it's really a widespread.
When people contact you, are most of them exploring the idea and trying to see what it might be like and what they could get to live in and how it would look and how it would feel? Or have most of the people you talk to already made the decision, I'm going to do this?
Almost everyone is ready to go. You know, they're so excited about downsizing or maybe purchasing their first home. They're ready to go. I mean, we've had a few people send us emails that are, you know, asking us questions about how does it work and things like that. But most people are saying, you know, when can I get a home? I'm ready to have savings and have a free time and live this new lifestyle.
Do you have models that people actually, if they come to Danville, people can walk through?
Our first model is going to go up in August.
I see. Now, you and your partners, I think there are five or six partners that you have in your business, are all young. You all look like you're in your 20s. Ryan, you're in your
31.
All right, you're a baby. Amy and Grace, they're babies too. We're the oldest people in the room here.
And I'm retired.
Okay, well, there you go. So is this mostly for younger people, or are we seeing people gravitate toward this who are retired and just really, really want to simplify and downsize?
I think so. I'm a living example of that. I have all the stuff, but what I have isn't worth having if you're not sharing it.
Okay.
And so I do.
Let me read some of the responses to our question, could you live in 500 square feet or less, on Facebook and Twitter. We lived in a 500 square foot apartment in New York. Downsizing is easy, not to mention liberating. There is no room for crap. Karen on Facebook, yes, a dream of mine. We have two kids in 1,340 square feet and are just fine. Jenny on Facebook, many people can't understand this, but my husband husband and I have simplified our lives to definitely more living and less having. Bill from Matthews. When I was young, my grandmother lived in a home that was under 500 square feet, which included a living room, kitchen, dining room, two bedrooms and closets, a bathroom with a shower, and what would today be called a mud room off the kitchen. I spent a lot of time in the little house and never thought twice about how small it was. If you go to one of those suite hotels, you're probably in about 250 square feet or less and have all the amenities necessary to live quite comfortably. When you think about mill houses that were very big in this area, that's how big many of them were. They weren't that much bigger than what we're talking about. Tom and Charlotte, great show. One question, how do you handle hospitality? There's no room for people.
Oh, yes, there is.
Sure.
Yeah, there is a lot.
You build decks. We'll have two decks. You have creative seating. We definitely are a couple that always have people in and out of our home, and we don't intend on having that change.
Okay. Angie writes, we could absolutely do this. We are moving into a 30-foot fifth wheel, which is about 235 square feet. In the process of selling most of what we own in order to make this move, we'll be parking the fifth wheel on a working farm and helping the farmer when he needs it while my husband and I continue to run our businesses full time. Our goal is more living, less having. That's the second person who said that, and you're nodding. Both Ryan and Amy are nodding vigorously at that idea, which is what you talked about that earlier in the program.
We sold 95% of our belongings just last Saturday.
And it's about the size of your life, not the size of your house.
John on Twitter, how hard is it to get tiny house insurance? What about fire in a shipping container? Can you get insurance on these places?
At this point, not as I don't know of any place where at the Tiny Life, we've started a nonprofit to help tackle that issue of getting tiny house insurance.
Zach, any guidance there?
You really don't see a lot right now because the policies are still gray. There's a growing movement with the policies in different cities to create these tiny house-friendly areas. And once you start seeing that grow a little bit more, I think you'll see more companies coming up and offering insurance for these tiny houses, sure.
I want to close with the sentence that Amy and Grace provided us before we even started this program. They say that tiny house living isn't just about the size of your house, it's about the size of your life. And what you're saying is tiny house, big life.
That's right.
Cool. Amy Gurley, Grace Downer moving to Arizona. We didn't talk about why Arizona to build their tiny house on wheels, but maybe that's another show. Ryan Mitchell, managing editor of thetinylife.com. John Williams, founder of Camp Tiny House of the Triad. Also, you can find that easily on the web. And Zach Jones, co-founder of Project Wosho, W-O-S-H-O. Thank you all for the hour.